the Underdog Podcast from SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty.
Welcome to yet another edition of the Conference USA Underdog Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. Happy holidays once again to you all as we get ready for the Christmas holiday and all the other holidays associated with the season. Joe Londrigan, Eric Henry, very happy to be here with you once again. Eric, how you been doing since we last chatted, buddy?
I am doing all right. The weather has turned a little bit here down in the Sunshine State. We've been battling the 50s and 60s, so a little bit chilly. But I will have to toughen up because I'm getting ready to make the trip to Alabama for the Camellia Bowl. And it looks like it's going to be another rainy, windy, 40-something degree day, and that will be deja vu to my Nashville trip. So looking forward to breaking out the long johns and beanies and all that good stuff. How about you? I know you're on the East Coast.
Yeah, currently I'm in New York City for some work stuff, and it's very cold. Not a big fan, but in a few days I get to go to Fort Myers, Florida, to hang out with some family members for the holidays. So very much looking forward to getting in some vitamin D and getting out of the frigid temperatures in the Northeast right now.
Good old Lee County, Fort Myers, Florida. That's God's country to me out here. You know, you gotta love a place like Fort Myers. It has its own quirks and idiosyncrasies, but it's a nice place.
That's one way to put it. Yes, but yeah. So that's where I'll be spending my holiday, and looks like someone else is going to be spending his holiday season in the Sunshine State as well. This got announced right after we recorded the most recent episode of the show, but looks like the FAU Owls have filled the void left by Lane Kiffin, who is now at Ole Miss with former Western Kentucky, Oregon, and Florida State head coach Willie Taggart. He was introduced as the program's new head coach. Looks like he is back in the G5 ranks, which I feel like is a good spot for him. We saw him have success at Western, like I mentioned, had some pretty decent teams at South Florida as well, and really just hadn't been able to get it figured out at the P5 level quite yet. So I feel like this is a good spot for him, and just given his knowledge of the state from a recruiting perspective, I feel like it's a good move for FAU. And, you know, the guy's a Division I college football head coach for a reason. He knows how to coach some offense in particular. So hopefully he can get back to that, because the last couple of years for him at FSU and Oregon have not been kind to him.
Really quick, Joe, before I give my perspective, I want to ask you this, and you kind of laid out your own POV as far as Willie Taggart and his coaching ability and, you know, how you feel about the hire at FAU. I'm just curious if I'm down here in the bubble in Florida and maybe I'm subjected to, I don't want to say negative news, but there's a, especially living in Tampa, mm-hmm. being a UCF alum and then living in Florida, I'm kind of subjected to, you know, there's a clear slant against Willie Taggart, right? Because FSU fans weren't happy with the job he did. USF fans were kind of happy to see him falter because he left. And then, you know, any news I see from my alums are, hey, you know, not screw Willie Taggart, but they're not the nicest old Willie Taggart as well. So I guess I'm just curious if maybe, you know, I'm kind of getting it one-sided. What was the feeling overall? I mean, just from, you know, maybe your own Twitter feed or your own, you know, sports content or however you want to phrase it, just what was the overall general feeling, you know, that you kind of saw him really tired? Because I'm wondering if the rest of the college football landscape is as quote unquote down on Willie Taggart as people have kind of been, at least in my general sphere.
Sure. No, I mean, I feel like it kind of depends on where you are. Like that feeling that you describe of being anti the guy based on the way he exited South Florida, and then of course the fact that he didn't perform very well at Florida State, there's definitely some sentiment around some sentiment similar to that, at least in Oregon where I'm based, given how he exited the University of Oregon program with, you know, basically the whole thing with him leaving to Florida State was he told his kids he wasn't going to leave, and then he did. So yeah, that that sentiment is definitely popular in the Northwest for sure. I can't speak to every part of the country because I'm not there on a regular basis, but you know, I definitely think over the years he's made one or two kind of unfortunate choices in how he's gone from job to job that have probably left a bad taste in people's mouth. I think in terms of his coaching ability, from what I saw, it seems like folks are relatively happy in terms of like what FAU fans think of bringing him in. I feel like they're relatively happy because I think he, you know, he was one of the better candidates that was, you know, recently freed up, let's say. So, you know, I feel like from the FAU fan perspective, it seems like people are relatively happy, but that feeling that you describe of, you know, not being a huge fan of the guy, given some of the things he's done in the past, then yes, I'm familiar with that feeling.
Okay. Cause you know, like I said, I don't have any issue with fans, you know, making their, I don't have any issue with fans having their opinion overall. You know, you're allowed to have your opinion. It just seemed rather kind of surprising to me because there's this feeling overall that the guy didn't deserve, you know, this chance, or it didn't deserve any of the jobs that he's gotten, or that he has, I don't know if like I said, Joe, if you guys get it, but one of the nicknames that people have from here is Slick Willie, and like as if he just kind of, you know, charmed his way into all these jobs. And I feel like there's a guy who just left Boca Raton, though you could say the same thing about, in theory, outside of his last stop. And I'm, you know, so, and I don't make it like I'm just defending Willie Taggart. I found the whole thing kind of curious. That aside, I think, and a lot of people point to his record, you know, 16-20 at Western Kentucky, 24-25 at USF, 7-5 at Oregon, 9-12 Florida State. Well, I mean, you know this as well as I do, that Western Kentucky was a rebuild prior to him. So, you know, 2010, he went 2-10. The next year, he goes 7-5. I can tell you firsthand that USF was a dumpster fire. Skip Holtz left that program not necessarily in the best shape. So his first two seasons were 2-10 and then 4-8. And then a lot of people tend to tie his last 2 years, 8-5 and 10-2, with the success of Quentin Flowers. Okay, well, that's fair. I do think that he did a fair coaching job as well, but the stats and record are what they are. Oregon goes 7-5, and then at Florida State, another rebuild. So I just think that it's a little unfair to say that the guy, you know, just isn't deserving of these jobs. And then another criticism I've seen of him, I've actually seen it sprout up from FAU fans as well in the signing day period that just passed, was that he wasn't able to bring in a quarterback. Well, I'm saying, A, the guy has been there all of, I don't know, a week and change. And then B, Florida State fans were saying that, hey, in comparison to Mike Norvell, which, you know, once again, I just made the point about him being there a week and a half, and then Mike Norvell is going to prove me, you know, to be an idiot. Mike Norvell was able to bring in two quarterbacks in this last national signing day period, the early signing day period, at Florida State. And he's only been on the job about a week and a half as well. And there's a criticism, a criticism saying that Taggart in his 2 years wasn't able to bring in a quarterback. And just my response to that would be, he had his four-star recruit in Sims. I believe it's Jeff Sims is the kid's name, lined up. But then once Willie Taggart was fired, Sims decommitted. So it just seems, I just would like to see, or I don't want to say like to see, because I really don't have an interest, you know, either way, one way or the other, outside of the fact that I'll be covering the guy when he did some media days and things of that nature. I just was curious about the overall sentiment surrounding his hire, because people, you just made a great point when you said that if you look at the rest of the coaching pool, I think if FAU was not going to go with Glenn Spencer, who clearly has earned the respect of a lot of guys on that team, this is the best hire you can go with. I just didn't see any of the other names there either being A, as experienced as a head coach, or B, having no experience at all as a head coach. And it seemed like, you know, there was a want for, and I'm not saying that you want to give retreads the inside track each time, but, you know, Willie Taggart's a young guy at 40-something years old. And given the things you said about knowing the layout of Florida and seeming to, I don't want to say have a level of contrition, but, you know, I do think if you asked him in a private moment, he would tell you that maybe he didn't handle his exits in the best way possible, that this is the best hire that FAU could have. So I guess I'm just a little bewildered at some of the negative juju, for lack of a better word, starting Willie Taggart. But overall, I think this is a good hire.
Sure. Yeah, no, I feel like it'll be a good spot for him to be in. And I mean, at this point, if we tried to understand every aspect of the inner workings of a college football fan's mind, I feel like we would be here for a lot longer than we have time for. But yeah, I think so. I think, you know, moving forward, this is going to be definitely something interesting to watch. And I think it just makes sense when you're a P5 coach and you don't have, you know, success or the kind of success that, you know, a lot of other these P5 coaches that have held down their jobs for a long time see, then you go down to the G5. And then if you're in that situation, the G5, then typically you go become an assistant or you coach FCS. This is just kind of the way of this industry. So, you know, there's not really anything out of the ordinary here as far as I'm concerned, and not a bad hire for FAU either. So with that, pretty major event that comes every year in the college football cycle, I guess, is National Signing Day. We just passed up early signing day last week, I believe. So with that, some pretty major recruits coming in for Southern Miss. They have kind of shot up the recruiting rankings for 247 from like six spots, I believe. I think they were towards the bottom and now they're in fourth or fifth from what I remember. And a big part of that is the flip of Frank Gore Jr. from FAU to Southern Miss. And then of course, the number six JUCO receiver flipped from Charlotte to Southern Miss. So, you know, Eric, you and I were talking about it a little bit earlier today, but Jay Hobson got a good thing going so far with this recruiting cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially with Southern Miss, a team that, you know, over the past couple of years, they haven't necessarily been the greatest rushing team in the nation. They've had guys who are talented backs, but I think when you bring in a name, and we're not just talking about him because his father is, you know, the Iron Man of the NFL, you look up in Frank Gore's third all-time in rushing, it's like, how'd that happen? You know, probably because he's been playing 20 years, but he's also been a very good running back as well. But Frank Gore Jr. flipped from FAU to Southern Miss, and he has been, you know, really one of the more highly touted prize recruits in what was to be Lane Kiffin's recruiting class. And I guess from, you know, maybe the correspondence from Willie Taggart or maybe Gore Jr. was just that loyal to Lane Kiffin that he didn't feel comfortable elsewhere. But it's just interesting that he didn't even hold off till the January signing period, which is what a lot of recruits have done, given coaching changes to maybe a school that they had previously committed to and the coaching change a coaching change was made. They decided to hold off till January, but Frank Gore Jr. decides, you know, he's that comfortable with Southern Miss and flips. And, you know, Boca Raton, a little bit different from Hattiesburg. So clearly he really enjoyed his time there. So that'd be interesting. And then you mentioned, a top 10 JUCO receiver in the nation, and Jason Brownlee was committed to Charlotte. He decides to make the last-minute switch to Southern Miss. I think you look at that, and you have to say once again, you know, you look at the high-powered passing attack that Jay Hobson's been able to put together there, and maybe that's attractive to a guy like him. Good size kid at 6'3", 205 pounds, so obviously he'll provide a sizable target. And for Charlotte, I mean, it's not all, you know, all doom and gloom, because Charlotte, as I've been paying attention to their recruiting, they've been able to pick up some nice pieces as well. So clearly Will Healy's been able to get the old recruiting rankings heading in the right direction there. And you expect that coming off the year that they've had. And then really quick, speaking of Charlotte, they're going to bring back a couple of guys in Ben DeLuca and Tyreek Harris, who missed most of the year with injury. So I just think that as far as if you're a 49er fan, or as far as 49ers go, plenty of reason to be excited with recruiting and going to get a couple of veterans back. When you're losing guys like Alex Highsmith and Benny LeMay, it's nice to bring back a couple of vets and see if you can get string together some bowl success coming off of the Bahamas Bowl berth this year.
100%. That program definitely headed in the right direction under Will Healy, like we mentioned. But with signing day, I know, Eric, you've been pretty on top of the recruiting class coming in here. You know, just I guess first and foremost, is there anybody in this class that you are particularly, you know, enamored with? Is there anybody in this class that you think could, you know, doesn't have to be this year, but could make a big impact for his team in COSA?
Once again, you know, I hate to sound like a homer just because it's the school that I cover, but really what I'm looking at it, FIU is they have two quarterbacks. So one from last year in Stone Norton, who redshirted, and one from this year in Hayden Carlson. And the reason I mentioned FIU is just because of this. James Morgan is graduating, so you know there's going to be a new quarterback next year. Kalen Wiggins, now, of course, he could improve a ton in the offseason. But Kalen, as far as a dual threat, is much more of a rusher than he is passer at this point. So I think it'll be really intriguing to see the quarterback spot because they have two guys who are very much pure passers. And you could, you know, look back this time next year and maybe see, you know, a situation like, you know, I'll piggyback off a different league here. But if you look at Arkansas State out of the Sun Belt, they have a kid, Lane Hatcher, who was an Alabama commit, signed with Alabama, transferred to Arkansas State, and was actually recruited by Arkansas State out of high school. And then he's made an immediate impact. You know, he started 9 games this year, won the Sun Belt Freshman of the Year award, throwing for 2,600 yards, 26 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. So I think if you look at FIU, and I'm just surveying the quarterback landscape, and I don't necessarily see, you know, outside of a North Texas, and I'm not necessarily sure what they have coming in at quarterback. I know they have a couple guys. Cade Renfro would have been a guy who I would have mentioned, but Cade Renfro flipped at the last second, so he's not heading to North Texas. So I think it'll be interesting to keep an eye on the quarterback battle at FIU. That could be pretty interesting.
100% with that. Let's talk a little bit about Louisiana Tech's recruiting class. They have the just in terms of the number of commits, they have the largest in the league right now with 22. It feels like, you know, Skip Holtz has never been, you know, never really had a down year in terms of recruiting. I feel like his classes are always kind of towards the top of the rankings come this time of year, at least when it comes to CUSA. But plenty of really good athletes in this class for them. Cedric Woods from Monroe, Louisiana at corner, Kershawn Fisher at outside linebacker, just so really starting to load up on defense, which I feel like is, has served him well in the past. And also just of note, which not that out of the ordinary, but nobody above a 3-star, at least when it comes to 247's rankings, when it comes to CUSA so far. But of course, signing day officially isn't until February. So, you know, we could see some bigger names come into this league so far, but can't make any promises, unfortunately. But yeah, Eric, do you kind of see what I'm saying with Louisiana Tech? I feel like there's definitely a reason why they're at the top so far with the amount of talent that's in this class so far.
No, yeah, most definitely. And you got to assume that at Tech, there's going to be some opportunities for some guys to step in immediately. You know, Jamar Smith leaving as well. They have a pretty senior-laden team, so they're going to have some guys who will step in and play immediately. And Skip Holtz, you know, I hope I haven't been too down on Skip Holtz on this podcast. I know I've mentioned his failures at USF pretty often, but in terms of being at Louisiana Tech, you know, he knows what he's doing. You know, he's been a consistent winner at Tech down there in Ruston, and he can recruit. You know, Skip Holtz is definitely no slouch as a recruiter. So you definitely can come to expect that from him as well as the Bulldogs. And, you know, I just think that it's a credit to what he's built down there, because I'm not saying this as a flight to Ruston, Louisiana, but there are a lot of places that college kids could go. And the fact that, you know, you are very quick. You mentioned 20-something kids make the decision on early signing day to go to Ruston just shows that Skip Holtz really building a football culture down there, and a good job by him.
Absolutely. So yeah, if you want to check out more coverage of National Signing Day, have more on underdogdynasty.com. If you're looking for, you know, notes about your favorite team, we'll probably have those on the site throughout the holiday season as we kind of catch up with everything that's going on with that aspect of college football at the moment. So with that, then I guess we can jump into bowl games. On the last episode, we talked about the first 4 bowl games on the docket, with the New Orleans Bowl, the Camellia Bowl, the Boca Raton Bowl, and the Bahamas Bowl. And those all wrap up on Saturday, the 21st. So with that, then we should probably jump into the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. I believe this time last year you were teaching me what Gasparilla actually was on the show. That was a fun memory. You plan on sticking around for the festivities of Gasparilla this year, Eric?
I am always in on the festivities of Gasparilla, probably more so than the, well, I was going to say more so than the bowl game, but I would never slight UCF and Marshall, my alma mater, and a Conference USA team. But for those of you listening who probably aren't in on the joke, and go back and listen to last week's episode, and you'll understand why I'm all in on the festivities of Gasparilla. Before we send this podcast off the rails, let's preview the game.
Let's do it. Yeah, so Marshall and Central Florida playing each other in that game on the 23rd on ESPN, 2:30 p.m. Eastern. You can catch that game. UCF favored by 17 points at Raymond James Stadium. I feel like that's pretty fair. You know, UCF, time and time again, they've proven that they can not just make postseason games, but win them. Marshall, you know, as much as we've kind of given them love this year for what they've been able to do, particularly offensively with Brandon Knox having a fantastic year, and then some of those other guys on the defensive side of the ball have been playing really well too. So I think this is going to be a competitive game, but I think UCF is just the more experienced team. I think they've just got more playmakers on the defensive side of the ball, and that's going to be a problem for Isaiah Green. So I really feel like UCF has this one in the bag.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, UCF, and this is even, you know, despite the fact that it appears, there hasn't been any confirmation from the UCF side, but it appears that their star receiver, Gabriel Davis, is going to take a pass on this bowl game and get ready for his NFL potential. And, you know, he's a guy who could be a top first or second round pick if he grades out well and doesn't think he needs to do with the combine, things of that nature, pro day. So even without him, you have to say that UCF has a litany of playmakers, guys like Otis Anderson, Adrian Killings, Trey Nixon, just, you know, across the board. It's a credit to the amount of talent that Josh Heupel, even before him, Scott Frost, has been able to accumulate at Central Florida. Now, if you look into the Marshall side of things, in terms of this being a 17-point game, I just really think it's going to come down to it. And I, you know, Joe, I hate doing this, not because I sound like a broken record or anything like that. I just hate to heap all this pressure on one guy. But it's been good Isaiah Green or bad Isaiah Green, right? You know, it's just a matter of, if he's going to have a performance that's going to be 9 of 20, you know, a performance like that, maybe one of the ones similar that he had against Boise State, this one could get ugly. But, you know, if Isaiah Green is able to perform a little bit closer to the potential and talent that we all know he has, I still think this is a UCF win, but it's one that could be competitive going into the third quarter, maybe into the fourth quarter as well. And the reason I say that is because it's not like we're dealing with the UCF of 2017 and 2018 where they've been pretty much invincible. This is a team that's coming into the year, or coming into this bowl game, excuse me, with three losses. You know, I don't think that Tulsa, by any stretch of the imagination, is a better program than Marshall. So it's not that Marshall doesn't have the capability to go in there and win this game. I think it's just really going to come down to, can Isaiah Green play consistent, keep the ball, you know, first off, not turn it over, and make the throws that are there. Brandon Knox, what type of ball game does he have? And then the defense, can they step up and at least slow down the UCF offense? The major thing with the UCF offense is this. You know, they're looking to go fast break, up tempo. And with Dylan Gabriel, if he's going to complete more than 60% of his passes, you really don't have a chance with the amount of weapons that they have. But if you can keep him, you know, about 50-55%, you know, maybe a little bit lower than that, you have a fighting chance. It's just because if that ball hits the ground, then you can't go up-tempo fast break. You know, the defense gets a chance to substitute. The offense has to wait. And that plays really well in terms of teams that are opposing UCF. As someone who's covered two UCF games this year, I can tell you that up-tempo killed Stanford. When they couldn't, you know, force incompletions, especially in what was a warm Central Florida day, they just got crushed. So that'll be the key for Marshall. But all in all, I think UCF is the victor.
We're in agreement on that one then. And with that, let's talk about the Walk-On's Independence Bowl on Thursday, December 26th, 4 p.m. on ESPN. The Miami Hurricanes and the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs do battle. Miami favored by 6 points here. I think Louisiana Tech has a huge advantage for the fact that they're playing in Louisiana. So not a bad travel day for them at all. And, you know, frankly, I just think they're a better team than Miami right now. You know, we saw kind of Manny Diaz and his team struggle for most of the year. Most notably, they dropped that game to FIU, of course. But yeah, I just feel like when Tech is at full strength and they have everybody that they need to have on the field, of course, referring to the Jamar Smith and Adrian Hardy suspension earlier this year, but like, you know, they were, you know, those two losses away from being the conference champions, more or less, I think. So just based on the fact that we've seen this team be so good offensively this year, and we've just seen Miami just consistently underperform, I think Louisiana Tech's got this. I'm a little surprised that Miami's favored.
Miami, and I'll say this, you know, this is only the opinion of me, but it sounds like you are in agreement, or agreement, I should say. Mm-hmm. The only reason Miami's favored is because of name recognition, and a lot of people don't watch Conference USA football, at least outside of our own, you know, area and kind of hemisphere. Miami is not a better team than Louisiana Tech. I mean, there's just no way to put it. And yes, I understand that they have guys like Shaquille Quarterman, you know, and Brevin Jordan and things like that. But first off, we don't even know their status. I believe Shaq Quarterman has said for sure that he will play, but there are a couple guys who are up in the air as far as their own bowl availability because they're going to pursue their pro career. But that aside, you can't tell me, if you look at Jamar Smith versus the quarterback, you know, situation there of Tate Martell, who granted hasn't gotten any snaps at quarterback, but he's still, you know, just lingering in Miami fans' minds. Nikosi Perry, you know, and Jaren Williams. I'd rather have Jamar Smith. That's not even an option. Amik Robertson is a top three player on that field. I mean, for my money, I'd say Amik Robertson could be the best player on that field. But if you want to, you know, include a guy like Shaquille Quarterman or Brevin Jordan, you know, I won't begrudge you for that. I just don't see any reason to say that Miami is deserving of being favored. And with that being said, I'll keep it short and sweet. I think Tech, you mentioned it, they're playing in Louisiana. and I hate using this, but you could give the old excuse, well, Miami players aren't going to be fired up for this bowl game. But guess what? Miami players, if their standard right now is that, you know, it's P5 bowl game or bust, excuse me, not P5, it's New Year's Six bowl game or bust, they're just not living in reality the past 15 years. So they better be fired up for something. There's a plenty of Louisiana Tech connections there as far as Blake Baker and Manny Diaz, who are former Louisiana Tech assistants. But I just don't see any reason why Miami will win this game. I think Tech especially has something to prove, given the fact that their Conference USA season didn't end the way they would have liked it. So I think Louisiana Tech takes this one.
We are, in fact, in agreeance on that one. With that, let's talk about the First Responder Bowl on Monday, December 30th, ESPN, 12:30 p.m. Eastern. That's between the Western Michigan Broncos and the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. Tops favored by 3.5 in this game. I feel like it'll be significantly more. Hopefully they don't have too big a head with how well they ended the season. Ty Story, of course, playing fantastically. Gage Walker contributing significantly with the move from the defensive side of the ball to running back, if you don't remember how that went. And then, of course, D'Angelo Malone, you know, strong contender for defensive player of the year within Conference USA. I feel like he's going to have a field day against that Western Michigan offensive line. You know, I watched more MAC football this year than I feel like I normally do. And the Broncos were just not a team that really stood out to me as the best example of MAC football. So, you know, I feel like WKU has this pretty much handled. So I can definitely confidently pick them for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I can totally see that point there. When you look at Western Michigan, they have some guys with pretty gaudy numbers. You look at running back Levante Bellamy's rush for 23 touchdowns and 1,400 yards. You look on the defensive side of the ball, they have a linebacker, Tashawn Hayward, who's racked up 132 tackles and 5 sacks. So they have guys put up gaudy numbers, but I think it goes to your point, and once again, maybe we're biased Conference USA guys, so I think it goes to your point as to the MAC more than anything else. I don't see any reason why Western Kentucky can't go in and play the game that they, you know, like to play, which is, really solid defensive football. D'Angelo Malone, Juwan Jones, guys like that putting pressure on the quarterback. Devin Key, making plays back in the defensive secondary. And Gage Walker, and it's not that Ty Story can't make plays. I mean, we've seen Ty Story progress a lot as a passer throughout the season. But it's that, you know, that throughout the year, they've been able to lead on that rushing game and then allow Ty Story to hit Lucky Jackson and guys like that, you know, to make plays, the easy throws there. That's probably the best recipe for success for Tyson Helton's ball club. And yeah, I mean, I think you made the point about the MAC, once again, not just being the quote-unquote best league. I just don't see any reason why Western Kentucky, given the wins that they have, shouldn't be able to get this one. I mean, you look at, you know, just quickly on Western Michigan here, you know, they got wins over Bowling Green, which hasn't been very good. You got an Ohio team. I mean, the one win they did have was Ball State, and that's a really high-powered offense. But, you know, a loss to Eastern Michigan, not necessarily the best loss, or the best game at all. You know, a win against this Georgia State. So I just don't see any reason why Western Kentucky can't go in there and get the win.
Same. Saturday, January 4th, wrapping up CUSA's bowl season, Tulane and Southern Miss play each other in the Lockheed Martin Armed Forces Bowl in Fort Worth. Tulane favored by 7. As of now, I feel like this one's interesting because, you know, I think Tulane and Southern Miss are both good examples of teams that, you know, were just real iffy for most of the year. When they were on, they looked fantastic. But then they just had other games where they looked, you know, flat. I feel like Southern Miss was very much in contention for the West up until the last couple of weekends of the season and just kind of buckled under the pressure. You could really call this one either way. I'm going to pick Southern Miss just because, A, I feel like what I've seen from Jack Abraham and Kez Watkins this year when they are, you know, in sync and at 100%, I think they're one of the better quarterback wide receiver duos in all of G5. So, you know, hopefully they can have a good day against the fellow Southeastern G5 opponent there. So, yeah, I feel pretty confident in picking Southern Miss, but at the same time, I can definitely see how Tulane could walk out of Fort Worth with a win.
Buckled under the pressure, I think, is a accurate way to describe not only Southern Miss, but Tulane. I just want to run down these wins really quickly here for you, Joe. They get a resounding win that I saw firsthand against FIU to open the year. They lose to Auburn, play them tough, blow out Montana State, beat Houston, which, as we look back in hindsight, had their own internal issues throughout the year, defeat Army, beat UConn, which, no disrespect to the Huskies, but there's a reason they're heading in the opposite direction away from the American Conference as a program, and then beat Tulsa. Not exactly, you know, a murderer's row of opponents. And you look at their losses. They get blown out by 30 against Memphis, lose to Navy by 3, lose to Temple by 8, lose to UCF by 3, lose to SMU by 17. I'm only making that point as to say, when you look at the quality opponents that they played this year, they quote-unquote, you could say, buckled under pressure. Tulane was a program that, you know, after week 5, week 6, you're sitting there, they're getting play in national attention. The way they were able to come back and win that Houston game was phenomenal, and I've seen Justin McMillan look like, you know, an unstoppable force at times. Corey Dauphine, Darius Bradwell, Amari Jones in the backfield. But I don't see any reason why Tulane should be favored in this game. I just think that Southern Miss, if they can play their brand of football, which is Jack Abraham completing passes at a high clip, pushing the ball downfield in that Buster Faulkner offense, Quez Watkins making plays, and defensively, if they're able to keep things in check, I don't see any reason why Southern Miss can't go in there and get the victory. I know I just wanted to make that point at the top about Tulane because I think fans who might be listening to this might think, oh, man, Tulane, you know, I saw them on SportsCenter. They had a really good year this year. Or they're a pretty dangerous team. Well, in actuality, I don't want to say overhyped because I've seen the best version of them, but the best version of them hasn't been consistent throughout the year. So I'll take Southern Miss.
All right, we're in agreement on that one as well then. So that is going to wrap up us previewing CUSA's bowl slate this year. So when we come back in the new year, we will review each of these games and kind of talk about what we saw and you know, who we have the most hope for in the future based on how they ended the season. So that'll be fun. But for now, we'll go ahead and wrap this show up by saying thank you all so much for listening to the show. As I say every week now, you know, let me just reiterate how much fun we have doing this show, and we're so glad you keep coming back every week. If you haven't already, you can give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That would really help the show grow. And subscribe if you haven't already. And we're on Spotify as well, so check us out. And then, of course, at @JOEHIO_ is my Twitter handle. Eric's is Eric C. Henry _. And of course, at Underdog Dynasty for the sites coverage of all the G5 football stuff you're going to see over the next couple of weeks. And check out UnderdogDynasty.com every day for more G5 football content. Happy holidays, everybody, to you and yours. Hope you're safe, you're warm, and you're taking in all the games. Merry Christmas, Eric.
Merry Christmas, Jeff.
Oh, happy football watching. I almost didn't say it.